Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really pleased to see so many people interested in PPP project in our ministry. So welcome on the board of Ministry of Transportation. I would like to welcome you here for our industrial day dedicated to the pilot project of D4, our highway. In the first part of today's session, we would like to present you the key parameters of the tender procedure that it's now under preparation, the indicative time frame for the pre-qualification phase, and selected advisor for the project. In the second part of today's session, we will introduce the result of the market sounding for the project we did a few weeks ago, and we would like to appreciate receiving any of your feedback and thoughts about the project, which we could then take into consideration when preparing the tender. Especially important for us will be your view related to inclusion of the operation and maintenance scheme on existing brownfield sections of D4 highway, the risk allocation between the public and private sector with regard to these brownfield sections, and basic parameters for the payment mechanism. In the end of my speech, I would like to underline that project has strong support from my side, but also from the whole government of the Czech Republic, and we really would like to do through this pilot PPP, testing that we can also do the PPP scheme for enlarging of the highway structure in the Czech Republic. And we believe that we will get all the support from our ŘSD, Road and Motorway Directorate, to prepare this project technically and with all permissions that our time schedule will be kept. So we sincerely want to have this project done. Working and have a test that we will utilize the PPP principle for the as an important part for the enlargement of the highway net in the Czech Republic. So thank you very much, and I hope that you will get all information you need, and that this is the kickoff of the process, which will successfully end with the celebration that we are starting implementation and the building and also opening this highway for the public. Thank you very much.
I would like to thank to the Minister of Transport for his introduction speech, and now I want to start with the presentation of the project we have prepared for you. So just for the start, I have to mention that this presentation and also another supporting documents can be from this time downloadable from our website, which has been mentioned on the start of the presentation. It's www.ppp.d4.cz, where you can download not only this presentation but also another documents which is currently available for you to go further into the details of the project. The project consists from the 32 kilometers of the greenfield part and 16 kilometers of the what we also called brownfield parts, which will be transferred to the selected concessionaire to operate and maintain. It's the part which has been built by the state in the past and are very close to the greenfield part, which is the main core of the project. The public authority here is represented by the Ministry of Transport and our body, State Fund for Transport Infrastructure, who will be responsible for paying the availability payments on which the project is based. Now we just want to shortly present you our scheme of the preparation team who is involved. So as it was mentioned, the basic public procurement are Ministry of Transport and State Fund for Transport Infrastructure, and also, as it was mentioned by the Minister of Transport, very important in this process is our Road and Motorway Directorate, who is responsible for preparing the zoning permit and building permit and land acquisition and all those related process. As our advisory consortium, we have selected the consortium led by White and Case, who serve as the legal advisors. As the financial advisors in this consortium is served by Česká spořitelna, who is member of the Erste Group, and as technical advisors we have on board representants of Obermeier Group. Now, just to show who we are, but it's not so important at this moment. But if you download the presentation, you can get this slides with the details of the project team involved. On the public side, the team is represented by Mr. Tomáš Čoček, first deputy minister, Mr. Luděk Sosna, who is director of the strategy department, me as the project manager, and the representants of the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure, director Zbigněk Hořelica, who is unfortunately at this time on his holiday, and Mr. Tomáš Blecha, who is deputy director of the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure, and Mr. Zdeněk Svoboda, who will serve as the financial manager for the project on the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure site. Here is the slide representing our legal advisors. As it was mentioned, White and Case, Mrs. Caroline Mirrell Smith on my right side, Mr. Vít Stehlík, and another members who are with you in the hall in the first row. As the financial manager, again, we have the Česká spořitelna, as the local PPP expert, Mr. Jan Schneider on my left side, and Mr. Stefan Uhlik as an international PPP expert, and other members of the team who are again in the hall. As the technical advisors, Obermeier Group, mainly represented by the expert Ludger Diekmann from the Deutsche Obermeier, and Mr. Petr Vašina on my right side of this table. Now this is I think most important slide, but many of you has now this scheme of the project, and now we would like to just briefly introduce you what we propose to be included in the project. The Highway D4 starts in Prague, and its main purpose is to connect the southwest Bohemia region. Currently, we have in operation about 50 kilometers of this highway. The part from Prague to Příbram, which is here in a blue color, is not a part of the PPP project, and our PPP project starts near the city of Příbram. The first section, which is in operation since 2017, is the section which serves as the part of the bypass of the Příbram city itself, and after that the new greenfield parts are starting. It is divided into the five sections as it is shown here, and we will go through the detailed map after that. On the southeast part, there are three sections which is in plan to be transferred to the concessionaire under the operation and maintain schemes. Now we will just very fastly go through the maps, detailed maps of the sections, just to show you what is technically included in the project. But again, you can study it much deeper if you download that presentation from our website. So the first section, which as what was mentioned is brownfield, it's the section Skalka to intersection with the second class road number 118 at Haje. It's about 5 kilometers long and it's in operation since 2017, so it's relatively new and from that point of view, there should be no significant problem to transfer them this section under the operation and maintain scheme. The next part, which starts at intersection with the second class road number 118 to Milín, is about 5.6 kilometer long, and it's the first part which serves, which is the greenfield in our project. And just to be sure, all the sections of the project have or are planned to have the four lanes, which has to be built, operate, and maintain. The zoning permit for this part is valid. Here we are going with the longest section under the greenfield scheme. It's about 11.6 kilometers long section, Milín Lety. Here we again have the zoning permit in force, and just a slightly changes of the valid zoning permit will be necessary to be in line with the actualized documentation for building permit. The next section is Lety Čimelice, which main purpose is to reduce the most problematic, from our point of view, section of the road with its intersection with the first class road number 19, where has many accidents in past. So this is just a 2.6 kilometers long section. Currently on this section we have all main building permits in force. So this is, from that point of view, the part of the project which is most prepared to start the construction itself. The last greenfield part, but almost last, is the section Čimelice-Mirotice in its length 8.5 kilometers, which serves mainly as the bypass of the town of Čimelice. And the last greenfield part is the section Mirotice bypass in its length 3.6 kilometers. So together, again, we have 32 kilometers of the greenfield parts, and then we are moving to the section which has been built by the state and are in plan to be transferred to the concessionaire under the operate and maintain schemes. The first section on the south part is the section Mirotice-Třepkov in its length 6 kilometers, and it's in operation since the year 2010. So again, it's relatively new part of the road. The next part is again the brownfield in the part of the intersection with the main road first class number 20, which has been separately rebuilt for this junction. So its length is only 0.8 kilometers, and it's in operation since 2007. And the last but not least part of the project is the brownfield part, which is so-called first class road number 20 from Nová Hospoda to Písek at the junction Krašovice, where the proposed PPP project ends. Now, what is, I think, most important for all of us is the timeline for the project preparation. Here we have to say that the first point we have to do is to be granted by the updated EIA statement, because in the Czech Republic we have faced to the infringement procedure with the European Commission regarding the implementation of the EIA directive, and as the solution of this infringement procedure, the result is that we have to update all the EIAs we have. So currently we are proceeding with updating the EIA statement to be binding for the subsequent permitting procedure, but it's important to mention that it's just an updating of the EIA, so EIA. So it's not the new EIA process. It's just to verify if the parts which has its zoning permit in force, all the parts has the zoning permit in force, is in line with the EIA directive. So there under this new what we so called the changing EIA, there will be no discussion about the variant of technical solutions and so on. So it's just only to be sure that the construction as is prepared is fully in line with the EIA directive, which is currently in force, and we have also implemented the new update of the EIA directive number 2014/52. So the changing EIA will also guarantee that we are fully in line with this last update of the EIA directive, which is from our point of view very important for safety of the investors. As it was mentioned, the zoning permit documentation has been already done, and all the zoning permits are in legal force. So from that point of view, behind us is the most important steps, of course, but the zoning permits serve as the stable point of the project. All the greenfield parts which are included in them. Of course, as we are moving forward with the land acquisition, there is a necessity to update the building permit documentation, because for all the greenfield parts, we have prepared the building permit documentation in past, start the land acquisition process with this documentation for building permit, but of course at this time, it's few years ago, when the documentation has been prepared, so to be able to be granted with the building permit itself, we have to update this documentation to the new technical norms we have in force. We await that this actualization will be finished just 2 months after granting the updated EIA binding statement. It's just to be sure that the documentation for building permit are fully in line with the conditions which are going through the EIA procedure. After that, of course, you know that in Czech Republic the most critical parameters of investment preparation phase, and also it is the same problem in many other countries in the region or all over the world, is the land acquisition. We currently have the most part of the land acquisition completed, but you know that the last 10% is almost the most problematic one. So our current plan is to finish with the land acquisition at the October 2019, and after that the building permit should be out until the end of 2019. Of course, we can get back to this time schedule in the discussion after the presentation will end. And now, just to present our current time schedule for the tendering procedure itself, it's necessary to mention that we have decided to proceed this tender as a competitive dialogue, as it is standard in the market. We want to publish the prior information notice at the end of February or at the start of March 2018, and the commencement of the pre-qualification procedure itself we are planning currently in April 2018. Then the setup deadline for submission the request for participate in competitive dialogue will end in June 2018. And now, after that, depending on the steps during the public procurements, our current plan is to say that which four consortium will go to the competitive dialogue itself. We would like to say this during the September 2018, and after that the plan is to start the competitive dialogues itself in October this year. The tender procedure itself will be based on our public procurement law. Here is just the relevant section and the relevant number of the acts in force which is relevant for this public procurement. It's not only the law on the public procurement itself, but also it's important to mention that the regulation for road concession is also part of the Czech Road Act number 13 from the years 1997. And as it was mentioned before, we would like to shortlist for consumption after the pre-qualification phase, mainly based on the parameters which are relevant to this scope of the projects we have. And now I would like to get the floor to our advisors who are here also to help me with this presentation and answering your potential question and so on. So just maybe Mr. Minister, one.
I will utilize this opportunity and apologize. I need to go for another work, but I wish you the fruitful meeting and successful meeting. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
So thank you for the floor. So on behalf of the advisors, welcome also to this event, the Industry Day, for the D4 PPP project. This part of the program will be the part where you can ask questions. It is important to note that the actual tender procedure has not yet started. So all the comments or remarks made or to be made by the public authority representatives or the advisors should be understood to be only of preliminary nature without any conclusive answers. Please bear this in mind. We are yet to make important decisions on the qualification requirements, on the risk allocation and other important matters. We will definitely take into account the feedback we received from you so far. Okay. Pardon. We have selected several issues for the discussion today, but you may ask questions from other areas if you don't see your topic to be there. I suggest that we cover the issue one by one. First, ask the experts the advisory experts to give comments, and then you may raise questions. It is also important to note that our experts are basing their comments mainly on their experience with other projects, other PPP projects. Some of them are to some extent similar, but most of them are very different. So we should also bear this in mind. The first topic to be covered is the proposed financial structure. And I would like to ask Jan Schneider to cover this topic.
Okay. Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So our job here is to deliver a bankable project. We plan, together with our colleagues at the advisory team, to show our client how we work in the kitchen and how we cook concessions on transactions that we have lived in the last couple of years. But first of all, I have to thank to the Minister representative and to the State Fund representative that we all are here, and to thank them for their courage and for effort to implement road life cycle principles in Czech Republic. As Vítek has already said, please note that the structure that is now in front of you, it's just a starting position for a discussion. We are here more or less to listen to your suggestions, then to give you a clear feedback and clear answer and picture of the final project setting and goals, how, from our point of view, to reach the bankability. Before we start the discussion, I would like just to make several remarks to this procedure. First thing that I would like to emphasize is that Česká spořitelna, as one of the biggest banks in the Czech Republic, is now working on hundreds and hundreds of concessions and PPP projects of course, smaller size in the Czech Republic. For example, in industries like city utilities, public bus transport, healthcare, social care, IT, energy, and many others. And so it's essential for those of you that are not based on a daily basis in the Czech Republic that the market here has a very good track record with concessions, and it gives our grantor and, of course, to us a good opportunity to start this new industry, road concessions in Czech Republic. Martine, maybe the next slide, please. Nevertheless, D4, as all we understand, it's still a first typical highway concession. And as a pilot project, we all need to be very accurate. We all need to have a strong bank that is assisting the grantor, but as well as bidders, to have the bankable project, to understand how the financial market works, and to be able to evaluate key risks of these transactions. We are very happy to have started discussions with EIB, and hopefully we would be able to provide with them a term sheet that would emphasize the key participation of this institution. But as still this is a pilot project, I would like my last remark, I would like to emphasize that we all need to invest. We all need to invest our time for the dialogue, because the dialogue will give us all the opportunity to have this transaction.
Stefan, would you like to add something? Well, all I would say is, as Jan has said, it is about bankability, it is about least cost, but it is also about being a little bit creative without wanting to be too radical. And by being creative, I think it means looking at the financial markets, recognizing that banks alone may not provide the solution, that there are some interesting institutional investors around. From my experience as a practitioner over 25 years in project finance, maturity is very often the maturity, the tenor of the loan or the financing is often the most critical determinant of a competitive financing. It is not our job to prescribe Far from it. The whole point of the PPP is to allow the bidders to be creative, but also prudent and bankable in what they propose. And as far as the EIB is concerned, we all know the EIB supports projects rather than bidders. We all know, of course, that this has timing implications, but that is our responsibility as financial advisors to the grantor to find an appropriate modus operandi and solution that will allow the EIB to participate in the project, if at all possible. It would be most desirable, but the project does not depend on EIB participation.
Yeah, so we all have already experienced many road concessions, and hopefully we would be able to deliver the best we can on D4. Vítku.
Thank you. So you have now seen the basic financing structure. Are there any specific questions with respect to the elements mentioned in the table? There are two slides. We can now move to... it's there. The second slide. So you can see the full table, which is spread over two slides. So any questions?
How fixed or how it will be transferred to the winner or the contractor, and if there will be also some possible space for creativity during the construction. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, in the Republic, if you have the building permission and then you have the variation, you have to change the building permission to achieve the accommodation. So where is the borders for this?
I think I understand. So regarding the first question, of course it depends on the final discussion under the competitive dialogue, but the starting position of the state is to have the 25 years of the operation and maintain phase after the construction will be finished, as it is described in the publicly available feasibility study, which has been elaborated for this project at the end of 2015, and as it was approved by the government at the January 2016. And regarding the next questions you have, we have the maybe more detailed slides on that themes as the next set of questions. So maybe if we can understand it later, but basically the Road and Motorway Directorate will grant all the building permit which is necessary to start the construction, and the changes of the construction will be possible, but will be under the risk of the concessionaire.
Hello. Yeah.
I'm gentlemen, just one technical, because we are taking the record from this session. So who would like to speak? There are two nice ladies which will give you the microphones to be able to record your question correctly. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And please introduce yourself at the beginning of the question. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Eric Maschiger from Erste Bank in Vienna. I have three questions. First of all, what will be the function of EIB in this, financing or just coverage of the risk or of the financing? Second one is reflecting the large interest of the community. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the pre-qualification criteria? As you mentioned, that you only want to continue with four bidders for the competitive dialogue. Just for clarification, you mentioned 25 years of operation of the motorway. When do you expect that the winning bidder will start with the operation? Already during the construction? So is operation of the existing roads already from the very first beginning included in the concession, or just after the completion of the construction? Thank you.
So regarding the first question, if I understand correctly, what is the role of the state fund for transport infrastructure? Just to be clear, their role is
sorry,
to
about EIB, not about
EIB. Okay.
No EIB.
Oh, sorry. So it's my misunderstanding. Also with my colleagues. So, please, if gentlemen from Česká spořitelna can comment on this, because I don't catch the question properly. Sorry for that.
No, actually, we are at the beginning of starting discussions with EIB. We are very glad for that, and in the next couple of weeks, we plan to meet and to discuss the indicative term sheet that would exactly answer your questions, how exactly EIB will be cooperating on this transaction and what exactly the tranche would look like. So it's a bit too early to answer this question, but of course, for us bankers, it's essential. Mm-hmm.
So regarding the second question, if we got it right, the qualification requirements, firstly, as already mentioned at the beginning, we will not be commenting on concrete, let's say, proposals of definition of requirements. We will definitely follow market standards. We have done some investigation already, and we'll make sure there is enough competition in the process. With respect to the shortlisting, the preferred number of shortlisted bidders is 4.
And the last question was regarding what scheme and when the operation and maintain so-called brownfield part will be transferred under the responsibility of the concessionaire. I would like to give the floor to our maybe technical or lawyer advisors to answer this, because we still have theoretically 4 options open for this, and of course it's also one of the reasons why we are choosing the competitive dialogue. Yes, because not all questions can be currently been answered. Because if they can be, we will not be able to use the competitive dialogue as the public procurement regarding to our law. So.
Let's cover this particular topic when we will be discussing the brownfield sections. I think. The start of operation is one of the topics which is inherently important to the brownfield element. So the question is whether there are any questions with respect to the financing structure. Please.
Yes, thematic for Motif. I have 2 questions. You mentioned earlier that no exclusivity is under consideration with respect to lenders. So I would want you to elaborate on that a little bit, what you have in mind. Secondly, Stephen Ulick mentioned creativity. There's no doubt a lot of creativity in euro-denominated markets. So in that connection, my question would be, has the government contemplated or is contemplating any sort of foreign exchange rate risk protection? Thank you.
I think this is mainly to be answered by the financial advisors. So please, Honza, if you can get your floor.
Well, again, I think, as I said already before, we are at the beginning of the transaction. So we are here more or less to listen and to understand how exactly you would consider your possible and potential participation in this transaction. And the issue of exclusivity, of course, is something that is very important for us to understand whether this transaction would be structured only in Czech crown or the euro will be involved as well. We are open for this, hopefully, to get some feedback from you, but I have no statement today that would, let's say, tell you exactly how this will be treated.
Akın Aydın from İçtaş, Turkey. I have a question for availability payment. What will be the currency? It will be a hard currency. If not, it's a repetition of the previous one. If not, will be a mechanism that will hedge to the fluctuation in the FX rate. And another question, how the EIB participation will be or when will be decided? What is the pending issues that should be solved or resolved for the EIB participation?
So if I may, to the EIB participation, just very briefly, we expect that the sooner the better we have the clear feedback about the term sheet and the pricing, the sooner we would be able to give you, let's say, concrete feedback about the EIB involvement. And regarding FX?
And regarding the currency of the availability payment, as the premier scenario, we are discussing with our Minister of Finance that our starting position very probably will be to have the availability payment only in Czech crowns, of course, which is part which will be indexed and the part which will not be indexed. But the starting position of the state is to have the availability payment only in Czech crowns to avoid the foreign exchange risk on the public side, because but of course this is again one of the most important questions to be discussed. If the availability payment theoretically will be partly paid in euro, what it can bring to the state, which kind of benefit on the side of value for money of this project, because regarding this scheme is very important to mention that the Czech Republic is still not in a ERM2 system. So we are not fixed. To the euro with the foreign exchange rate. So of course this is, as was mentioned, one of the most complicated questions we have for competitive down.
But it would be interesting to hear from the financial institutions present here whether they consider a Czech crown asset to be an attractive one. My personal hunch is it's pretty good news. How many surplus countries are there in the European Union in terms of current account deficit and in terms of government budget? I would have thought Czech crown is good news. If you think differently, say something.
They agree.
Good.
René Poruba, Astaldi, Ičtas. Back to EIB. Do you expect any qualification requirements from the side of EIB for the participants?
We are not counting that the previous experience with using the EIB will be one of the qualification criteria, but as it was mentioned by my colleague from the lawyers, everything can change. But currently, we don't have this in mind.
So it means that EIB doesn't have any requirements for future partner.
Uh, My understanding again was not correct. Firstly, I understand that you are asking if there will be some qualification criteria regarding the experience of the bidder with the EIB. So the answer to this is no. But of course, we are calculating that the main partner for EIB will be the state, and the EIB will get into the discussion with the preferred bidder only, mainly with the preferred bidder after. It will be selected, of course, but I think we have also the representants of EIB in the hall. So if he would like to comment on this, but if no, I will also understand this.
So you are not afraid that there will be some qualification requirement like a seat in EU or just EU countries, suppliers or partners or something like this?
We have a very negative experience with the statement of Office for Protecting the Competition with that. So that I think is enough answer at this moment.
Just one additional remark to the question on the AIB and their requirements on qualification. Requirements, we don't expect there to be specific requirements at this stage of the process.
Türkiye Kuldoğan Gülermak. Firstly, as a banker, ex-banker, I should say that as a banker who has done project with EIB, they don't have any such criteria for the bidders. The only thing they would like is not different than EBRD type of multilaterals is, you know, transparent process, international procurement, you know, that type of thing. That's the only thing. And I have experience with them with Eurasia Tunnel. Similarly, you know, local currency available to payment with some FX mechanism, so I really know what kind of expectations EIB will have. This last comment, and my question is, I'm sorry if I missed it, but I really want to know if there's any a new junction, bridge, and tunnel in the project.
Just if I may, my name is Jan Trojak. I'm from CSOB Bank. I'm a Czech-based bank. So just to respond to the question which was placed with regards to the Czech-denominated assets, so I can definitely confirm that this is of our interest, and we think that the Czech crown denomination of the project could, for us as a Czech banks, will be, of course, no problem. And considering that there will be Czech-denominated cash flow and outflows, so it probably makes sense at least to consider that at least certain, and I would say larger part, could be in the Czech crowns. Mm-hmm. And maybe on the top of that to say that with regards to the length of the financing, I do consider that that 25 years, 30 years of lending in Czech crowns is possible, of course, and we did it in previous years, including the related swaps. Thank you.
If we may briefly react before others will raise questions to the question regarding the specific elements in the project. And first of all, many thanks for your comments on EIB. There is one relatively complex intersection. Of course, there are bridges, but there are no, I would say, above the average constructions which you would normally see. So it's pretty plain project in terms of complexity and terrain.
Just to imagine the longest bridge on the Greenfield part has 250 meters. Yes. So. No tunnel and just only three junctions, three intersections with the lower class roads. Now I think that Peter Jeffries from EIB would like to make reaction.
That's right. So Peter Jeffries, I'm the deputy head of the project finance division at EIB. So I just thought I would stand up so people can see me, and if there are questions specifically related to EIB and EIB capabilities, and EIB processes, then those should probably be addressed to me. But I think today is obviously not about me. It's about the project, and it's about the project team. So I obviously am here, and I'm perfectly happy to hand out some business cards. I'm perfectly happy to speak to you probably after this session or subsequently. But obviously, I don't want to hijack the purpose of today, which is to talk about the project. But thank you very much.
Thank you for coming and be here with us. And the next question, I think, is here.
Misha Nahorny, Omers Infrastructure. Do you see this project to be a one-off, or do you see it as a wider part of the build-out of Czech roads in partnership with financial investors and construction companies?
I think that this was mentioned also by the Minister of Transport, that if this project will be successful, we would like surely to get this experience from this project to another parts of the network we have currently in preparation phase. So
do you have something specific in mind? Do you have other projects in mind, or is it more generic?
We can mention the D35 project, which connects Hradec Králové and Olomouc. It's the northern backbone of the Czech highway network. And as the another one, we would like to mention the highway D7, which connects Prague with Chomutov. And after that, it always depends on the parts where we will have the zoning permits for the longer parts, which is suitable for the PPP scheme. I think that those two should be enough in this time.
So any further questions on the financing structure? There'll be more issues. Maybe it's good to mention there'll be the brownfield section element, the preparedness of the project, and some other issues regarding off-balance sheet treatment. So you can, of course, ask questions as we go. So I guess we can move. So the next topic we would like to discuss and hear your views on is the brownfield sections, the brownfield parts in the project. As you have seen on the map, there is one section at the beginning and three smaller sections at the end of the project, length and route. It is fair to say that when we were analyzing the classic PPP projects and road projects, in most cases, the brownfield elements, the brownfield parts, were to be reconstructed early on, before even the operation started. In Germany, there are many projects like that, which also included the extension of number of lanes. So in our case, because we want the concessionaire to start the operation of the brownfield elements without first having to invest a lot into it, so basically an O&M mode of operation, we are able to look and compare experience on other projects, but it's, I would say, not as rich in terms of precedent solutions like in the case of brownfield sections, which were totally overhauled and reconstructed. I would like to ask my colleague, Caroline Miller-Smith, who is our international PPP expert based in Weidenkais London office, to share with us a few thoughts on the treatment of brownfield sections in PPP projects without giving any, I would say, or hinting really conclusive recommendations for this project, but I guess then a discussion may follow on your views, because a number of issues arise in connection with the brownfield section. So brownfield sections will be now the discussion topic, so we may ask as many questions as you want after Caroline's contribution.
Thank you, Vit. As Vit said, we're still at an early stage of looking at the contract and the risk allocation, so these are very preliminary thoughts. But looking at international precedent, as Vit says, there are many examples of largely greenfield projects or greenfield projects with brownfield sections which have been refurbished. There are, of course, also examples of projects where there has been a substantial takeover of a brownfield operation without a full refurbishment. For example, the M25 in the UK was required the full O&M of the brownfield sections. In this project, obviously, we are interested in your thoughts as to the best approach, because clearly there are different approaches in terms of when and how the O&M on the brownfield section should be incorporated into the project. So the simplest, in a way, for lawyers anyway, is the idea that from the mobilisation of the construction, however we describe that, the O&M of the brownfield sections is passed also to the DBFO contractor. And we'd be interested in your thoughts on that and pros and cons as regards that, given that obviously this is geographically perhaps a more unusual project in that you have the two brownfield sections some distance apart and then you have a long greenfield section in the middle. So can you efficiently operate two brownfield sections at the same time as a construction in the middle? We'd be interested in your thoughts. And then clearly the other extreme is that the state continues with the operation and maintenance of the brownfield sections until such time as the greenfield is through construction, and then you have a end-to-end motorway that is operated and maintained by the DBFO contractor from the end of construction. And then in the middle, I guess, you have the state continuing to operate the brownfield sections, but heavy maintenance risk passing to the contractor from the start of construction on the basis that heavy maintenance risk fits naturally with construction risk. So any thoughts on that would be, we'd be very interested to hear. In terms of risk allocation, we are also obviously in the preliminary stages of looking at how you deal with the risk allocation in terms of the brownfield sections and latent defects or other issues that might arise in respect to the brownfield sections, and we're cognizant of the issues there as well.
Thank you, Caroline. So any questions with respect to the brownfield section? Anything? Whatever. Thank you.
Alex Kornman from Macquarie Capital. Maybe less of a question, just a sort of response, but I would, probably on behalf of most people here, very strongly encourage the approach that the Ministry of Transport takes the time now, before the pre-qualification and during the pre-qualification, to prepare all the surveys of the existing sites and then to provide and to warrant the correctness of those surveys. That is a far better value for money and practical consideration than asking four bidders to review the data and come to their own assumptions, which, you know, they don't have access to the road, tends to lead to overpricing.
Thank you. It's the same idea we have to use the time when the bidders will be pre-qualified. We will use this time to grant the grant the necessary surveys we plan. And regarding the question of responsibility, I would like to give the floor to Vitek, who will describe the responsibility of each party.
Basically, as a principle, to the extent surveys will be done, and that's the plan, it is well understood that the responsibility for the correctness of the data provided through these surveys will need to be guaranteed by public authority, so the liability will be lying with the public authority. With respect to the interpretation of the data or their sufficiency, this we would consider to be more for the concessionaire to swallow as a risk.
I guess the obvious follow-up then is to ensure that the level of detail in the surveys is quite high to minimize the chance on everyone's side of any misunderstandings.
That's absolutely a valid point. We have some ideas in respect of the depth in which and extent in which the survey should be done. Nonetheless, we would definitely welcome thoughts and ideas from the market in terms of what would be the satisfactory level of details and type of data which would help the concessionaire, the potential bidder, to swallow as much risk as possible. Yeah. Maybe before further questions arrive, maybe we can touch upon the technical documentation. Which we intend to provide an ideas around this topic. So I would like to ask my esteemed colleague from Obermeier, so Mr. Diekmann and Mr. Vashina, to give a few thoughts on this. Then you can continue with questions.
As we have understood before, the zoning permit is almost available and is valid. Has to be adjusted based on the EIA. Building permit is under evaluation and should be final for the financial close. So that means for the greenfield section there is pretty good documentation available. For the brownfield section, we had just heard a little bit about the data, survey data of the actual status. From the technical point of view, can be said that the documentation that the public authority is using now for their own maintenance, that should be available also for the bidders in order to see what is the status. If there are, let's say, more survey data needed, that can be asked. From my point of view, I would say that what the authority is using itself is that what should be available. That is what in the presentation is seen, detailed technical inspection, operation reports, historical maintenance data, bridge inspections, and any kind of accident surveys or whatever has happened in that section should be prepared and be available.
Tomáš Hanebá, Czech Infrastructure Association. I would love to ask you, will they be allowed to do their own surveys on top of the documentation available? If they conclude that it's might be beneficial for the bid.
Sorry, your question has been to own surveys by the bidders,
If the bidders will be allowed to carry out their own surveys on the top of the documentation or on the top of the due diligence provided, yeah. If they conclude that it would be beneficial for them.
My understand was correct, and there is a simply answer, no. current position of the state is no, because it's not very easy practicable that four bidders theoretically can make its own surveys on the road which is in operation and which has primarily to serve to public. Mr. Poruba, in the second lane.
Thank you, sorry. For greenfield sections, I'm missing archaeological survey in the process because it can be a problem for the construction. So this is my question, how it will affect all the process. For brownfield sections, operational reports and historical maintenance data, it means that RSD has already this system of maintaining with the roads and highways, or what kind of data it will be?
Regarding the archaeological surveys, I would like to get the floor to Obermeyer, and after that I will try to reply to your question regarding the data we have currently collected on the brownfield part.
I think part of each evaluation of a project is to look also to archaeological maps and the available data in the authority. So that should be available, and we will have a look on that in detail.
It's important to mention that the archaeological places are standard, which is indicated are standard part of the preparing of the building permit documentation. So we have already mapped where the archaeological location theoretically should be, and there are not so much valuable archaeological point around the way. But of course, we have to carry out some basic data for you and decide during the dialogue where the border of the responsibility will finally be. And regarding the second part of your question, regarding the data we have on the brownfield parts, the Road and Motorway Directorate still don't have this managing system you mentioned in your question, finally. But still, we have the data of the works which has been done on these parts from the time when it is in operation. So we now a lot about the bridges, and of course we know also which works has been done during the operation period on this part, and based on this the data room will be fulfilled with the data collected by the Road and Motorway Directorate on that times.
So if I understand properly, the risk of the time schedule of the archaeological works will be part of the discussion during the dialogue with the competitor. And it means not only archaeology, but, for example, relocation of utilities, etc.
We are prepared to transfer to the concessionaire valid building permits. This includes also the reallocation of the networks you have mentioned, and regarding the archaeological surveys, we will try to move as far as we can, and we will see if, after starting the competitive dialogue, what will be the stage where the state will be at this moment, and based on this, we will start the discussion.
Before moving to further questions, hopefully, we still would like to come back to one of the topics mentioned on the previous slide. May come back to the previous slide. The last bullet. The question of when the O&M section should be handed over. It was partially discussed, but we would like to hear more from you. Caroline has given you, let's say, the possible approaches, basically one extreme, another extreme, some middle ground. Is there any already any preference which you could voice with us and share with us in terms of whether you can imagine to take over the operation of the brownfield parts right from the beginning, or rather straightforwardly no, not. Could anyone express its view on that topic?
Johanko tam vzadu.
Please raise your hand.
Visible.
Alex Kornman from Macquarie. I think the question of whether it's value for money to take over the operations at the start of the concession can only be determined once all the materials are available. I do think, however, the idea of splitting the maintenance and the operations roles is not a good one, and I think it leads to all manner of fighting and you know, difficulties. Better to have one clear handover date.
And would you see as a unsurmountable problem if the operation during the greenfield construction period is with the state and then handed over basically simultaneously with the commissioning of the greenfield part?
From that point of view, we have to take into account also the questions that in the time of bidding, there will be that kind of surveys mentioned on the brownfield part. And if we are thinking about transferring all the parts at one time, we have to take into account that this kind of surveys will be three or something like that years old when finishing the greenfield parts. Then the brownfield parts will be 3 years older than at the moment you are bidding. Yes, so this is again the one of the most important questions to discuss: how to optimize the value for money on this question.
Pierre Sautisky, Hochtief. I think, as already mentioned by my colleague, both options are possible. I think what has to be considered from contractual point of view is that obviously in this situation you cannot operate those two separate sections with the same regime you would apply after putting everything into operation. And obviously, as already said here, also there's a question, do we have to take over any O&M centers, any personnel, anything like that? Because it also determines what we do. But obviously, simple O&M is possible even for those 5 kilometers, although it won't be perfect value for money. But I agree with your argument that the survey data we receive otherwise will be much older. And picking up on the point of the survey data, if I could comment as well, because I think it's worth considering what has been done already on projects in the past, that when you employ your contractor for the service, you reserve a certain part of the work that is to be done, let's say, 20-30%, for the period after the 4 bidders have been pre-qualified, because then those bidders can look at the results that are already on the table and possibly agree on in which points additional investigation is necessary, where if you already have a contractor, you can do it on the spot. Otherwise, if you have to go through public procurement for another contractor to do the service, probably bids will be already in and you still have no one to do the service. So for your consideration.
We are prepared to start the competitive dialogue with the basis surveys we would like to obtain during the pre-qualification phase, but also we are prepared to make additional surveys based on the results of competitive dialogue. And regarding that question, possible to mention that the Road and Motorway Directorate has the framework contracts for doing that kind of surveys during the time. So it's relatively fast process with choosing the contractor for the further surveys, which should be made as the result of competitive dialogue from that point of view.
And one short comment on the personnel, whether personnel is to be assumed by the concessionaire for the O&M purposes. The plan is not to impose any obligation on the concessionaire to take over personnel doing the O&M work.
There are currently no facilities regarding only this road. Yes, and it's separately dislocated not only for this highway but also for another roads in the region, and this is not so ideal option to transfer this personnel, because this facilities and personnel will still serve for the lower class roads in the region after transferring this road to the concessionaire. So calculate with the new facilities and the new personnel.
So any further thoughts, questions on the brownfield element before we move to the next topic? Okay, you can ask questions later, no problem. So let's take a look at one more slide. Okay. So the next topic, which we partially covered already, but we want to give it more attention, is the construction readiness at the time of the final offers. And generally, the timing of obtaining the building permit and land acquisition for the purpose of construction. I will first ask my colleague Caroline Miller-Smith to comment on various approaches we have come across in other projects we investigated for this purpose of the question, and then we would like to share with you experience we have gained on the Slovak D4 R7 project as well.
Thanks, Vit. So I think it's fair to say that government and bidders tend to prefer that zoning permits, planning permission, whatever you describe it as, depending on the jurisdiction, are in place prior to final tenders and certainly prior to financial close, though there are examples, perhaps less in the transport sector, where that has not been the case. As regards expropriation and final building permit, I think practice does differ, and there are certainly cases that I can think of where expropriation, compulsory purchase, however you describe it, has not been fully complete, and bidders have felt, at financial close, has not been fully complete, and bidders have felt that that is a manageable risk based on a risk allocation which assumes that continues to be the responsibility of the procuring authority. As regards building permits, there are different approaches that have been taken to final responsibility for procuring those in different markets. And that's a good segue to my colleague Marek, who I think is going to talk briefly about one experience recently.
Yeah, hello. I'm Marek Starman from White & Case as well. I was in charge of the Bratislava PPP project, or Bratislava
roundabout PPP project where I worked together with Caroline. And I just wanted to mention, we thought it would be useful to maybe summarize a few lessons learned. As you know, in the Slovak and Czech legislative environments were very similar, and to a large extent are similar still. The construction permitting process diverged a little bit, but there are still similarities. As you may know, there are some delays in the Slovak projects in the permitting, which occurred after the financial close, where the idea was that the government would be delivering the building permits by predetermined time. We will be trying to minimize the risk of this. Obviously, nothing is finalized, but we will be trying to have basically all the permits most likely in place before the financial close occurs, and we will be also trying to set up the contracts in such a way that they do require basically both parties to be completely ready as of the financial close to commence the construction. So that's the general idea. Better readiness on the government side, and definitely high requirements also on the concessionaire side to get really kick-started as of the financial close. Mm-hmm. It may happen that the period between commercial close and the financial close will be somewhat flexible. Obviously, there will be challenges related to this, but we are very much hoping that this will help to better shape the project and get everybody to start on a sort of in a better situation.
Thank you, Marco. Any questions with respect to the topics we just discussed? Timing of building permit issuance. Okay, please, Pane Porubo.
Yes, basic option with the minimal technical requirements. My question is related to the technical prescriptions of the Minister of Transportation. Does it mean that these technical prescriptions will not be applied in this tender at all, or?
They will be applied as the minimum standards.
And adjustment of the design, coming back to my question on the beginning with the building permission and changes. What is the adjustment of the design? What we can understand on this?
Yeah. We would like to set up as the basis that we want to have the 4-lane highway and don't want to go to the lower level of the safety of the road. But of course, as it was mentioned, the changing of the building permit will be possible. So if you will come as the bidder with the proposal to change, for example, the category, we can discuss about that. But it will be at your own risk to proceed with the changing of all permits which are relevant to be able to build another category of the highway than is prepared by the Road and Motorway Directorate. The state will be not responsible for cooperation on this changing.
If I just may, a few words again. In the technical dialogue, we expect extensive discussion with you. We expect to see where the major savings could be achieved. Obviously, we have a mechanism in place to make sure that any contributions you may bring are not made available to the other bidders. And we will be finally defining where the changes will be allowed, where they won't be allowed, what the parameters are. You will get the basic parameters, and then you will decide on your approach, whether you optimize and ask for new building permits or optimize without asking for new building permits. Obviously, that's also an option depending on the nature of the optimizations. But it's not like we are presenting a final design and this is what you're building and there is no room for improving anything. But there will be sensitive balance. We don't we haven't found that balance yet. The dialogue and the rounds of the technical dialogue are supposed to bring bring complete clarity on what we will be ultimately allowing to modify in your final bits and whatnot.
Just, I'm not afraid of the building permission as such, or changes in the building permission. I'm more or less worried about the adjustments of the design contra the technical prescriptions of the Ministry of Transportation. That's why first I ask about the technical prescriptions of the Ministry of Transportation and then about the adjustment of the design. Because sometimes the optimizations can go against the technical prescriptions, because the technical prescriptions of the Ministry of Transportation are quite strict.
Of course, we can discuss this further, as it was mentioned by Marek. This is one of the reasons why the competitive dialogue is chosen as the procurement form regarding the public procurement law. Of course, from my word, it was mentioned changing the category is some most extreme change we can imagine, and of course proceeding with this change is very very risky. So it's very hard to imagine that you will really come with changing the category itself. But of course you can imagine from your experience that there are such kind of changing which don't need necessarily to change the building permit itself, and this is mainly the kind of changes we want to discuss, and also discuss if there is theoretically possible some exemptions of the documents revealed by the Ministry of Transport, possible.
So any further questions on permitting issues? Then we can move to the other points we would like to discuss. Remaining three points on our agenda, but of course we are willing to consider and discuss further issues if you wish so. From the area of financing matters, I would like my colleagues from Česká spořitelna to say a few words about off balance sheet treatment. And I think we have a slide on EIB, which I think we covered to some extent, and also the currency issues. So, Honzo, if I may hand over the floor to you.
Yeah. Okay. of course, off balance sheet treatment. It's, as most of you know, the latest guidance or the methodology was given in year 2016. So it's a document that is that includes hundreds of pages, a document that is full of fresh energy, and a document that will guide us in the perspective of structuring the concession contract as well as the key risk allocation. Because from the banker's point of view, it has a huge impact on some of the key issues that bankers have to evaluate very carefully, which is, for example, deductions of the availability payments that might go to zero, or the compensation mechanism, especially in the scenario of the default of the concessionaire. So this is something that we will have to work with. We are at the beginning, but thanks to the latest Slovak project, where the Slovak D4R7 was completely confirmed by Eurostat and by Slovak Statistical Office to be treated as off balance, we have a good track record to follow and to educate the whole team to be able to follow those assumptions. I have nothing else to add to that.
I think we covered the multilaterals and the currency as well. So we can answer further questions you may have from any work streams.
Just to be sure, the last parts of the question has been prepared for discussing the role of EIB and the currency. So we have discussed on these schemes enough. But if you have further questions, we can move to them again. But as the main part of the presentation, we currently have this overview map. And if you have another questions you want to discuss, please, we are here for this purpose.
One question regarding the approval from the liabilities arising from the PPP contract. Do we understand correctly that in the Czech Republic, unlike in Slovakia, it needs to be approved not just by the government but also by the parliament, which itself is quite tricky for the bidders and a bit risky? Or if this is the case, do you envisage any potential change of the law, if it's possible, within the period we have? Thank you.
Yes, thanks for that question. We would like to say that we have in law the duty to agree the concession agreement also by the lower chamber of Czech Parliament, and we are prepared to work with the parliamentary representations through the whole process which is before us. And would like to present to the lower chamber the contract agreement after the preferred bidder will be selected, and based on the financial parameters which should also be the part of the material to be approved by the parliament to finish with this approval before the formal financial close. Of course, we are open to discuss if it is a safe option for the concessionaire to be sure that the parliament approval has been made correctly. And of course, we still have a time for theoretical slightly change of this law, but not its principle. So we would like to stay on the principles we have, but maybe if the discussion will deliver the results that the law is not strictly correct, or the bidders will not be sure that the parliamentary approval is correct, then we are open to discuss the possibility changes in wording of this law. We still have a time for it, but we don't seem this as necessary if we are interpreting these words we currently have in law.
And just one addition, there is a plan, as Mr. Neček said, to inform the lower chamber of the parliament right in time, already during the process, not to come to them for approval at the last minute. So there is a meeting planned to take place in March to present the principles of PPP, to get them acquainted with the pros and cons of PPP, and try to preempt any surprising development later on.
Mm-hmm.
So any other questions, or you are satisfied with the discussion we have? I don't hope so. you have to be.
Bertsmula, Astaldi, Ichtas. My question is if the toll will be just collected by the concessionaire or if it will be a part of the payment.
No, the toll and also the vignettes will be collected by the standard way by the state. So there will be no responsibility of the concessionaire to collect toll or to sell the vignettes or something like that. It will be just purely availability based payment mechanism.
Zoltan Pop, Intertoll. Can you please go back to your previous statement? You said when we talked about the brownfield section, there is no O&M facility. But once the motorway is ready and open for traffic, how did you plan to operate and maintain the section? Is there an O&M depot or something built and part of the construction permit?
We are prepared to discuss the ideal location for the maintenance buildings and service facilities. We currently have the technical study for optimizing the location where it theoretically should be have, and we are mainly considering the middle of the greenfield parts. Where we see the best option for placing the maintenance center, but the scope of the maintenance center will be mainly the responsibility of the concessionaire, because we can imagine that our normal schemes for this kind of maintenance centers cannot be so ideal from the point of view of future concessionaire. So from that point of view, we would like to take place to discuss the options of the maintenance and service facilities, which will be seen as option as optimal from the point of view of the bidders.
From Ichtash Hastal again. I have a question for the availability payment. Who will make the availability payment, the ministry or treasury? And is there any guarantee for this payment on the budget or on the legislation of the Czech Republic?
The availability payment will be paid from the financial sources of the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure, and the calculated hire of the availability payment represent just about 1.5% of the whole budget of the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure per year. So from that point of view, the guaranteed income of this State Fund for Transport Infrastructure, which comes from the taxis and from the toll and so on, will be sufficient to guarantee that this payment will be covered from this State Fund.
Legally, this will be obligation of the Czech Republic, so it will be treated as any other sovereign obligation. So.
We are prepared to make it as easy as possible for both sides. so that's the answer I can currently get.
We can certainly say that there will be bilingual documentation and the technical details, what will be governing and so on. But there will be bilingual documentation, right? We can say.
Tomáš Arva, Czech Infrastructure Association.
Back to the currency, the denomination of the project. Is the discussion over, or will the ministry require from the advisors actually to deliver any sort of financial analysis of the value for money, or?
The discussion is not over. We have just put on table our starting position based on the document prepared by the advisor consortium.
So there is going to be an analysis carried out on the value of money.
Of course, before we say these words, we bring today there was this kind of analysis, of course.
Hi, good afternoon. Bruno Rebel from Marguerite Fund. We talked about the operation of the brownfield section, but what is not very clear to me is the greenfield sections. Will there be some operation as well? I mean, to what extent will the greenfield sections overlap with the existing road there?
The greenfield and the brownfield part are directly connected. So it seems as in the terrain, it seems like one highway which consists from the greenfield and the brownfield parts. And of course, also the greenfield parts has to be operated and maintaining
during the construction period. Will there be? I mean, is it widening of the existing roads, or is it completely new?
In such parts, it's also the widening of the half profile built by the state in the past. But from that point of view, it's a complete rehabilitation. There will be not the rest of the road remains as proposed in our building for documentation of building permit, but of course on the part intersection with the second class road 118 and the village of Milín and around the town of Mirotice, it's the widening of the half profile built by the state in the past. So from that point of view, there will be necessity to operate the public transport during the construction period. But again, the details has to be discussed much further, in much deeper detail. But thanks for this. Thanks for this question. It's also important regarding the scheme we will choose for that.
Maybe just for imagine, it's very nice to see on the map at the moment what is red, it is now in operation. What is orange will be the greenfield. Particularly, we use some current first-class road. In some cases, it is absolutely new construction. Just for basic information, you can use this slide. Sorry, I didn't do my presentation. Luděk Sosna, head of the strategy department, Ministry of Transport.
Back to the prequalifications. During the prequalification, what will be the conditions? Will be the condition of a legal entity in Czech Republic, or could be an international company? First question. Second question, during the prequalification, will be as in normal Czech tenders from RSD that there will be demand for the technical specialist with Czech language and Czechite also?
So to the first question, as it will have to be a tender which will need to be in compliance with applicable law, so Procurement Act, and which is based on the EU directive, we will not be discriminating against Czech or foreign entities. So that's to the first question. Second question, I think we need to say that the requirements to be put into the qualification are still being debated. So, you know, we are not allowed to give you any conclusive answers. So, unless we want to hint something else, but really, this is something to be decided.
We have to mention regarding the first part of the question. Of course, the final agreement has to be signed with the SPV established during the process. And we are currently analyzing if it is legally possible to sign the contract with formally other entity than the one who is starting the tendering procedure with proving the qualification. So our preferred scenario is to find the way which enable this. And, but again, it's the pure question how the Czech law can work with this preferred scenario, and we cannot say at this time yes or no. And regarding the second question, it's nearly the same. There are some such kind of conditions you have mentioned in the Czech law, which is not optimal from that point of view for foreign bidders. Again, we have to find the way how we can enable the foreign companies to be able to participate, because it's our will to enable foreign companies to be able to participate in that competition.
I think we honestly cannot really answer your questions regarding what the required qualifications criteria will be. The qualifications criteria will be published very soon. Everybody will find them at the same time. We can't
speak it will be to too late, sorry.
Tell you in advance what the qualification criteria will be. Go to the Czech Public Procurement Act. The Czech Public Procurement Act sets the basic limits. We will try to make it as friendly as possible. Where the Czech law allows us to move, we will try to move, but we can't tell you now what will be the requirements.
What was happening in Slovakia for
the specialists? In Slovakia, we didn't have any language requirements for the specialist, I can tell you that. We didn't have a requirement to have incorporated entity or to have Slovak incorporated entity at any point, although tax implications basically made it clear that ultimately you had to do the incorporation in the Slovak Republic because you can't do it otherwise. I'm not sure this is the case in the Czech Republic. This will be for you. And please be assured you will have enough time to make up your mind how you want to set up yourself. It will not be a qualification where you will have to break your leg to hire a technical specialist because you have to file in three days. So yeah, please be assured this will be a professionally run process. Everything will be smooth. You will have enough time to prepare. This will be the least of your problems, I assure you.
Good examples in Slovak.
We know very well where you are going your questions, so we will take this in mind when preparing the tendering and pre-qualification documentation. Yeah? Sorry that we cannot be much concrete.
Can I? Yeah. Okay, my name is Michael Mistrik. My question is still, I'm unsure. The currency is still open, you know, but isn't there a bit of positive discrimination in favor of EIB? Why EIB? I know EIB pretty well from my previous cases, and it's rather sometimes working in very cumbersome way, you know, and it can complicate the case, you know, sometimes, you know. Not necessarily, yeah. So my question is that we have, of course, potentially, well-qualified Czech bankers, you know, and, you know, if it is held in Czech currency, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Again, if I may, just a word, and sorry for jumping in. just to make sure there will be no legal requirement for anyone to cooperate with EIB on this project. This will not be imposed on anyone. If you want to use whatever EIB makes available, you will be allowed to use it. If you don't want to use it, you can come up with any other solution. If you work with EBRD, if you work with whatever African, Asian development banks, other multinationals, it's really up to you. But I know the discussion at the beginning sort of made EIB look like a cornerstone player in this, and that very may well be the case, because I guess many other international parties involved in these processes often want to work with EIB, but this will not be, definitely not will be a requirement, just to clarify that. I'm sorry.
Yes, but again, we need to get experience with cooperating with the European Investment Bank in this kind of project regarding the next financial period of the European funds, where the role of EIB will surely be much stronger than in current period. The role of grants will be lower, and due to that reason, we surely want to try to discuss the conditions with the EIB, which will be proper for this project, and try to enable the financing through the EIB. So, please, any other comments, or if someone from the table would like to make some notes on the themes discussed. If not so, we would like to many thank you for your today participation here in Prague, and looking forward for your further cooperation on this project. Thank you very much, gentlemen and ladies. Thank you.